Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Murder 123 Special Edition tonight on Thursday night at 11 p.m. Eastern. We are following, of course, our buddy Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling's great show, WCW Retro, and some of his people have come to join us, so we're glad to have everyone. First of all, to our hosts, ladies first, Robin McCray. How are you doing tonight, Robin?
I am good. Nice to hear everybody's voice.
It's good to have you here. I know you've been out rescuing. You've been rescuing puppies all week, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been a long week.
I know, and you haven't. They've been getting sick, and you've been giving them extra care and extra love, and
yep.
We all appreciate everything you do for them. And they're pretty.
Thank
I love
you.
Those dogs. You got some great dogs. I mean, and gonna come up there Monday and grill some burgers, and I get to see my best buddy Chester. Chester the dog.
Oh, he loves you. Chester can't wait to see Uncle Don.
Yeah, because I'm such a pushover, and whenever I walk in the door, the first thing he does is he stares at me, and that means I want a biscuit, or I want one of these cookies that mom has, and he just stares at me, and I just look at him, and I say, you are weak and worthless. No, you are worthless and weak. Drop and give me 20, right at the animal house. He won't do it, so I have to go give him a biscuit. He's great, and so are all the other dogs. So anyway, we're glad to have you here.
He was so mad at me yesterday. Oh my goodness! I heaven forbid, I wormed him. I mean, he threw the biggest temper tantrum. He created a mess all over the place, and he was pissed.
Well, it's like you tell a kid, it's good for you to be quiet. And that's what you say.
Yeah, exactly. He made sure there was a big enough mess for me to clean up, so I'd think twice about it next time.
Okay, well, we're glad you took care of Chester. And Pop, and here he is, fresh off of WCW Retro, Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Great to be here. I just got a previous broadcast with WCW Retro. Was probably one of the best of the year so far.
Ever.
Such a great group of people to be around, and the callers were amazing, and that means getting such great feedback. So, but yeah, I'm great to be here with you guys, and Robin, please give Chester a big old hug for me, right?
I sure will. Everybody's favorite buddy is Chester.
It really is. So we're glad to have you here, Papa Stro, and there's a lot of fun on your show. And we have had two of your erstwhile and wonderful fans have come over to call in and join us. First of all, I've known him forever, about as long as I've known you, Papa Stro. Steve Logan, how are you doing tonight, Steve?
Oh, good. I'll be listening in, interested in the topic tonight.
Yeah, we're glad to have you here. And I have a new friend, and I met that new friend on Papa Stro's show, and she is just awesome. Granny, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. And I have a question for Robin. What kind of dog is Chester? Because I love fur babies. I have two dogs of my own. So thank you for rescuing all those little puppies that you rescue. But what kind of dog is Chester?
Oh, thank you. Chester, I used to breed a cross that was a Shih Tzu cross with a Jack Russell.
Oh my.
And Chester is one of the ones out of my breeding. I have actually four left. Of course, they're older. They're not going to have babies anymore. And he is one of them. However, everybody else has all this nice shaggy hair. And then there's Chester. Chester's hair is the shortest hair known to mankind. Yet he has and John can testify to this, he has a mohawk that has grown on the top of his head in a strip down across the top of his head. And all the way down to the bottom of the crown of his head.
Oh,
and it's like 4 inches long. It's not any wider than my finger. I mean,
He
is just hysterical. He's chestnut colored with four white feet and a white chest and his mohawk.
Oh, he sounds precious.
Oh, he's hysterical.
Yeah,
everybody loves Chester.
My son, Anthony, he's 33 years old, and he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder when he was 11 years old. So he got a dog in 2011 from the animal shelter, and when he got his puppy, he was only 10 weeks old. He was a Chihuahua mix, but he's like the color of a German Shepherd. He looks like a miniature German Shepherd because sometimes his ears will perk up pointy and sometimes they're floppy. But when we were going home after we looked at him the first time, and Anthony says, I want that dog. So we called the next day, and they were closed, but they said, well, if your son wants him, bring him up, and we'll let you take him home. So my son has had his dog almost 9 years. And Anthony was saying, well, what could we name him? And I said, well, he's a Chihuahua mix, and my son is a big wrestling fan like I am. So he named him Mysterio after Rey Mysterio because it looks like he's got a little M in the middle of his forehead. And he is the sweetest little companion, but my husband and my son said that I brainwashed that dog because ever since Anthony's had him, even when he was a puppy, we would go up to my son's apartment and Mysterio would always come lay next to me. And he still, even to this day, he still does. He always comes and lays next to grandma. So, you know, he loves his grandma.
Well, I have three of my grand dogs here as well. We have a full house. I have 8 of my own dogs, and then I have 14 fosters, and then I have 3 grandchildren, and then a friend of mine that's staying temporarily with me, her dog is here. So we have a lot of dogs, and they are all spoiled rotten. Everybody knows what time the cookies come out.
God
forbid we meet, and especially Chester. Chester doesn't look like anything of his litter mates or his siblings. He is in a class all by himself. He is just...
Oh, he sounds adorable.
Oh, my
gosh.
He's
a space
alien.
He
is. And he's got this curled up tail. And then on his rear end, which this probably isn't appropriate for the radio, but whatever, he has swirls around it. So it looks like between his butthole and these swirls, it looks like an upside down face. When he trots away from you, that's what you see. I mean, it's just, there's no words for Chester. He's actually taken over my bed while we're talking right now. And, you know, he'll be very indignant when I go to
move. Hello, Chester.
Yeah. He is absolutely precious. And then he's, on his muzzle, he's got all this hair that sticks out on the side of his nose. So it looks like he has this giant goatee and mustache. But
oh,
yet his entire body is the shortest hair known to mankind, except for that and his mohawk.
How cute. Well, I do appreciate the invite, Dr. John, to be on your show tonight, by the way. So.
Yeah, come on anytime.
Oh, we're glad to have you.
Yeah, we're normally on Monday nights, but we had a few technical we really had some technical difficulties Monday night. I almost started having them today with the internet, but everything cleared up, which is great. And
I help with my own podcast. It's not my podcast, but I help with a podcast on Monday nights from 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock Central Time. So I probably won't be able to call in much on Mondays, but you know, it worked
That's
out
right.
for me calling in tonight.
Yep.
So
I'm glad it did. So tonight, okay. So as I was doing, I have a lot of friends that have put out books. And one is a coloring book of serial killers that's called Serial Colors. And I've been using that to cheat a little bit and get some great names for us to discuss. And so I looked through there, and there was Albert Fish. And I went to my friendly Wikipedia and decided that Albert Fish will not be on Murder 1-2-3. He's too bad, and so we're just gonna put him on the banned list for Murder 1-2-3. If you want to go read about him, it's pretty frightening stuff. So anyway, then we have the friendly sorority girl lover and loves to kill girls, Ted Bundy. So Ted got the nod very easily tonight, and you know there are a lot of interesting things about Ted Bundy that I never knew. And as I was doing some research and everything, and Steve Logan, who's with us, Steve said he watched a documentary about Ted Bundy real recently. Didn't you, Steve?
I believe I watched the biopic that Zac Efron starred in. I'm sure they changed some details from the actual story to make it more dramatic, but I'm sure I've seen other I think there was a Netflix documentary based on him called the Ted Bundy tapes, where he basically gave his life story to a journalist, and it was pretty interesting. I think with the miniseries.
Yeah. He was a smart guy, actually. Down when we talk about it, you're going to find out that he went to law school for a while, and he actually represented himself every time he was in court. And he did a pretty good job a number of times. He, you know, lack of experience finally caught up with him. But he was a sharp, sharp guy. And he was born Theodore Robert Cowell in, of course, beautiful, sunny Burlington, Vermont. One of my best friends is from Burlington, Vermont. And he never really knew who his father was. One account says that his father was a salesman and an Air Force veteran. And then his mother said that she had been seduced by some old money war veteran named Jack Worthington. And that's the name that actually appeared on one of his on one of his birth certificates or one of his family papers. But we really don't know who his father was. There's also talk that his father might have been his grandfather, who was a little bit interesting. You'll hear all about him in just a few. And it looks like Robin will be back with us. I guess she had.
I'm here.
Okay. So it looked like. Oh, okay. That was from previous. Okay, great. Yeah, it just showed that your call had dropped, but that was a while back. Anyway, so he and his mother ended up living with his grandparents. Now, he said that he thought his grandfather was a wonderful, kind person, and that he really identified with him in everything. But the rest of the family said, well, Granddad threw one of his granddaughters down a flight of stairs because she overslept.
And oh, wow.
And that he beat the grandmother and all kinds of stuff. And this is the interesting thing, is he used to have conversations with people that weren't there. Kind of like the old Harvey, you know, the Puka, where when Jimmy Stewart would talk just out in the room, and he said he was talking to the invisible Puka. Well, that's exactly the way Ted Bundy's grandfather was. And I mean, we don't know, but he could have been, it could have been a little bit crazy, or he could have had some invisible friends. We don't know, but I think it's probably time to move on. Oh, and also he subjected his wife to electroshock therapy periodically to kind of clear out
the gift that keeps on giving.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you know, that's pretty, you know, I mean, the guy was not a whole lot worse than Ted, maybe not. But anyway, so what happened is ended up moving to Washington State. And at that point, his mother met this man, Mr. Bundy, at a church social. And he was a maintenance guy. He was a carpenter and maintenance guy. Ted Bundy described him as not being very smart. She ended up marrying him, this Mr. Bundy, and he ended up adopting Ted. And Ted was always complaining that his stepfather was just not very smart. So, you know, he shouldn't have been doing that. I mean, he should have been lucky that he had a roof over his head. They probably all felt like they were. So anyway, Ted, during the nighttime, when he would sneak out of the house, he would go around people's trash cans trying to find magazines with naked pictures of women in them. And that was one of his pastimes when everybody went to sleep. What a charming thing. I will bet Papa Stroh,
a man of class.
I would bet you that Papa Stroh, Steve, and I have never gone sneaking out to go through people's trash to find dirty pictures.
On behalf of American women, thank you.
I guess
I've never went that route. Honestly, I can't say that I have, honestly.
Yep.
I was fortunate to have the internet.
Right.
Okay, Steve. Great. Well, so anyway, so then he goes to college, and then Ted Bundy becomes interested in politics, believe it or not.
Why am I not surprised?
Oh, this is great. And so he volunteered in the Seattle office of Nelson Rockefeller for president. And then he actually got a job being Arthur Fletcher's driver and bodyguard. Now, Arthur Fletcher was running for he was running for lieutenant governor. And so he was his chauffeur and everything. I mean, so Ted was out there with the big boys. And in August of 67, he was a delegate at the Republican National Convention in Miami as a Rockefeller delegate. I mean, what more can you say? And he actually went to some fairly, you know, some fairly good schools, University of Utah. He went to Temple, and you know, he was really going somewhere because he was a smart man. And you know, then all of a sudden, he was, you know, this focused, goal-oriented boy, enrolled at the University of Washington. And he even then took a job at Seattle's Suicide Hotline Crisis Center. And he met this lady named Ann Rule, who turned out to be one of his biographers. And so he knew her, and she thought he was a pretty swinging, pretty nice guy. However, it, you know, things didn't end up that way. He started going downhill, and but he was still able, even though he didn't have really good LSAT scores. You know, for the law school admission, he had really great letters of recommendation from the folks in the political arena that he had worked for, and he actually got into law school. He was accepted into University of Utah and another smaller one that he ended up going to over there in Washington. So he had a girlfriend throughout the entire time, and all of a sudden, she called him up one night. He hadn't been staying in touch with her, and he wouldn't talk to her. He said, "It's over. Goodbye." So that's the first time that he did something fairly strange. You know, he just all of a sudden broke it off with his girlfriend. And then he started skipping classes in law school. And so he finally stopped attending. And what's interesting, it's like we find out later that he had certain goals in life. One goal that he had was he wanted to prove to everyone that he could get married. And his current girlfriend, Stephanie, we think her name was Stephanie Brooks, she was thinking that they were going to get married. And he also wanted people to know he was smart enough that he could get into law school. So he did both of those and then ended up just canceling both of those out of his life. So now comes the murders. And this is, you know, in the early 70s at University of Washington over there in Seattle, or in the suburbs of Seattle. There was a girl that walked from her dormitory to a jazz concert at the campus auditorium. She never got there. And so the next day, the call went out that, you know, this girl is missing. And several people noted that they saw her outside of the auditorium talking to a fella that was on crutches and had a big briefcase, and they saw her walk off with his briefcase. You know, like she was helping him. And then she vanished. And she was a member of Chi Omega sorority. And then it wasn't another month and a half later, another girl from Chi Omega went missing, and all of a sudden, she's gone. And so came a trail of girls that were gone. And, you know, what do you do? I mean, it was getting around. Does anybody remember the media frenzy about a killer in Northwest United States around in the 70s? Does anyone remember those stories? They were panicked. There were girls that were getting off 3 months. They didn't know what to call them. They didn't know it was Ted Bundy. But I mean, does anybody remember? I do. I'll go ahead and date myself to that much. I remember there was a story, and oh God, they were thrilled when they caught him. Damn if he didn't escape. Then they had to go catch him again. He was always trying to escape. The police were really, really concerned, and there was really no physical evidence that they could find other than they were all young and attractive, and they were college students with long hair parted in the middle. And then, you know, come to find out a girl at the airport was talking to a man with brown hair, and his arm was in a sling. That was his trademark, is he would tell them he was hurt, he was disabled, and he needed some help. And that's kind of where everything happened. Then they would walk off with him. And a lot of times they would go to his car. He had a tan-colored VW Beetle, and that's where he ended up committing a lot of the murders. I mean, it was just horrible. He even, during this point, I mean, this is how hypocritical it comes. He was working in Olympia, Washington, which is the capital of Washington State, as the assistant director for the Seattle Crime Prevention Advisory Commission, where he wrote a pamphlet on women and how to avoid rape. Go figure. Obviously, he was an expert, because he not only did he murder women, he raped them, and all kinds of stuff like that. And then he finally met a girl named Carol Ann Boone, who turned out to be his girlfriend and later his wife. It's kind of interesting how that happened in the courtroom, because there's a law in Washington State that said if you declare that you are married to someone and that they declare that they're married to you, and if you do that in front of a judge, you're actually married. It's crazy as it is, and that's how he got married. And he actually has a daughter by that lady, which is kind of crazy. But anyway, people were scared to death. And girls started, there weren't as many girls hitchhiking. I mean, because you're talking about in the mid-70s, we've just come out of the era of love and Woodstock and peace and love and everything.
Manson family.
Yeah. Okay, Steve, you're 100% right. Yes, but, you know, we just came out of peace and love, and everybody was trusting everyone else, and people were hitchhiking all over the country, and girls stopped hitchhiking on the West Coast because they were afraid that they were going to be just, they'd end up dead like so many of them did. And so anyway, it just went on and went on and went on. He just kept killing people, and the police in King County finally got a description of the suspect who had been seen around several girls who ended up missing. And they did a composite sketch and put it in the newspapers. And the people that he had worked with at the University of Washington and at some of the various agencies and some of the political party things that he was involved in, they all recognized him, and they reported him as a potential suspect. But then again, they were getting up to 200 tips a day, and it was kind of unlikely that a clean-cut former law student with no adult criminal record could be the one that was doing all this. And so anyway, they on September 6th, grouse hunters, that's what they are, hunting quail and everything, stumbled across the skeletal remains of two of the girls out in one of the state parks in Washington. And it was 6 months later, some forestry students at a community college discovered skulls and other bones of some of these girls in a place called Taylor Mountain, where Bundy frequented, and he hiked up in the mountains of Washington, right up there with Bigfoot. So what happened is that he received a second acceptance letter to the University of Utah Law School, and he moved to Salt Lake City, leaving his new girlfriend in Seattle. And even though he called her a lot, he apparently dated at least a dozen other women, and apparently some of those didn't make it out alive. Now we got another string of homicides in Utah, and it's getting a little strange for him. And they're starting to put two and two together. I mean, there's just a whole list of girls that he killed when he was in when he was in Utah. Women had been beaten and raped, and he strangled with nylon stockings, and he was a little bit of a sicko. After he killed some of them, some of these women, he would wash their hair and put makeup on them. And then he had relations with them after they died. So it was really not good. And then the girlfriend saw the composite picture out from Utah, and she called the police and said, "This is your guy." So they went out there, and they ultimately got him when he came back to Washington. And she didn't tell him that she had reported him to the police. And so it was just, you know, it was crazy. And he killed another girl on 1975 in January, a registered nurse. She disappeared while she was walking down a well-lit hallway between the elevator and her room at a hotel. And so she died, too. And apparently he was up to all kinds of bad things. And we didn't really hear a lot about that. In fact, I remember we didn't. We just heard about the murders. We didn't hear all about the perverted, horrible things that Ted Bundy had done. And so, now, Robin, as our resident person who can kind of look into people's minds occasionally, what do you get from this guy, Ted Bundy?
He is so deeply disturbed. I mean, he really is. He's got this underlying hatred. I mean, really, he does. Even more so for women and young girls than he does the men. But, he hates everybody. And he thinks that he's just above the law. Like, he can do whatever he wants to do, and then he thinks it's funny. So he kind of adds that sick twist to it.
Well,
he has a lot of anger. I would be really curious on the relationship that he had with his mom, because the hatred that he has for women is, it's not normal, and it's so deep. He almost has a feeling like women owe him something.
Well, it's very interesting. In one of his interviews, he said the following. He said, "You know, when I kill someone, I feel like I own them. They're sharing themselves with me, and no one else can have them, and they're mine." So he's that's what he said about every girl. He killed only women, and he admitted to 30, but they believe it may have been closer to 100. We've had some folks that have really, 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 really done a lot of things and have some big numbers, but he's potentially got one of the biggest numbers of all time.
Yeah.
He was finally caught on August 16th, 1975, because he was speeding, and a cop got him, and he was found with a ski mask, a second mask, a crowbar, handcuffs, trash bags, a coil of rope, an ice pick, and other things that, you know, looked like he might be a burglar or he might be a murderer. And so they picked him up. They went to search his apartment. In his apartment at that time, he had snuck back to Colorado, and they found some things that led them to believe that he was a killer, because he found some photographs of the dead bodies and some photographs of the girls in general, and they kind of knew that they had the right guy. He actually represented himself three times in court, and the first time he got everything thrown out. The second time that he represented himself, he said, "I've got to go. I want to go to the library here in the courthouse because I need to check something." So they just let him walk into the library, in the law library in the courthouse, and he just went around a stack of books, opened up the window, and jumped out of the second floor window, and just he was gone. And he did hurt his right ankle badly, and so that plagued him, and that ultimately was his downfall. He spent 6 days running from the police because you know they were after him as hard as they could, but he snuck around the barricades. He was always one step ahead of them. He went up into the mountains. He just broke into people's houses, stole food, stole clothes, stole guns, whatever he needed, and he got back out. And he really had not been able to get much sleep, so they finally caught Ted Bundy. He was weaving on the road. It was another cop, saw him weaving on the road, thought he was drunk, stopped him, and lo and behold, there was Ted Bundy, the serial killer, and they took him to jail. He kept trying and trying and trying to escape from jail because he would always sneak in things like knives and saws, and every time they would check carefully at his cell, he would have sawed something like some of the bars. He would have sawn them apart like he was getting ready to escape.
Yeah.
But he never did. And he was finally killed. Killed him. He was electrocuted in the state of Florida. So, I mean, you know, there's Ted Bundy. Now, I'm going to ask Steve, because Steve's seen some documentaries. If you haven't seen any documentaries, if you have anything to add about the material facts on this dossier that I've presented, it came from three sources. Primarily, most everything was in Wikipedia, but there were some other sources, like some comments and some newspaper articles I was able to pull in and read as I got ready for this show tonight. But does anybody have anything else that they remember from a documentary or that they remember from any reading or just experience?
The documentary I watched was Conversations with the Killer, the Ted Bundy tapes from last year on Netflix. And then I watched the Zac Efron biopic, and I was surprised by how much charisma he had, like the fact that he had followers, women that sympathized with him. I guess maybe the fact that he had some charm is kind of unsettling.
Yeah, I mean, he apparently could sell ice to an Eskimo, and women liked him, and that's why they would do things like carry suitcases for him, and then he would just show them he was not disabled or that he did not have an injury, and that was the end of that. He did, he did actually keep bodies around as trophies for several weeks or even a month at one time, and they did decompose, and, you know, he was fine with that. He still kept them around. Ted Bundy was a real sick guy, and but he did get caught, and he actually the only thing they were ever really able to pin on him were the deaths of those first two girls at college, the Chi Omegas. And so based on that and just all the other circumstantial evidence, he was sentenced to the electric chair. At least that's what the things had that I saw. Do you have anything different, Steve?
No, I think you're right. I just wanted to add, I think from what I saw or listened to, that his wife may have, like, tipped him off to something that she suspected. I think he had a wife that suspected him of going out and committing these crimes, earlier in their relationship or somehow at some point in their relationship. And then I also think I learned that he did confess last minute to most of the crimes that he confessed to, or to possibly get a plea or get not an execution but life or something like that.
It was really interesting.
He
was ready to say that he killed these girls in exchange for 75 years without capital punishment, without being killed. And then right before he was scheduled to do that, he just said, I can't do it. I can't stand up there and admit to everyone that I killed these girls. So he went ahead and took the same punishment that he would have gotten originally, which would have been death by electrocution. So he just couldn't bring it himself to saying that he killed these two girls. And I mean, he actually could have gotten out, because his plot was, and this was very interesting, I called my attorney. He said, yes, folks don't understand that if you are in jail long enough and enough people that, you know, will die so that a lot of people don't really remember what went on. I know you've got transcripts of the court trial, but if you have enough people that have died, you can sometimes get out of jail because nobody can really remember the facts. And that's a tactic that has been used by attorneys in a number of cases. And I thought that was really interesting. And he said, yes, it happens all the time, more than you would think. Someone down for murder, one life in prison. 25 years later, an attorney will go in, get them right out of jail. We don't talk about that very much, but it can happen. Because when there's nobody around to remember it, and nobody can testify at a parole board hearing or something like that, I mean, they're gone. And that's something a lot of folks don't know about our legal system. Is there are loopholes if you have attorneys that really know what they're doing. And I thought that was really interesting, because his general plot was going to work. He just needed to admit that he had killed those two girls on the stand in the courtroom, and he just couldn't do it. So he took a great plot to get out in 20, 25 years and just blew it. And so he ended up, you know, dying for it. He was put to death. So yeah, it's interesting. And it was very interesting that after a year of law school, he was able to represent himself pretty well. God, he could have made so much money as a criminal defense attorney. If you think about that, I mean, you know, we don't want to be gruesome here, but he had talent and he was smart, but he just, as Robin said, he was a little crazy, and he had this,
yeah,
he had a chip on his shoulder about everything, didn't he, Robin?
Yep.
Following up, I believe one of his judges said what you said, that he had enough intelligence to be or enough skill to be a lawyer, but just the choices he made, like, you know, prevented that, obviously.
Yeah, that is just that is just crazy how that happened. Now, Papa Stroh, I've got an interesting question for you. You've lived a wonderful and long career in professional wrestling. Have you ever seen wrestlers that are that good at the law and that can represent themselves? Because a smart wrestler has to be one of the smartest people in the world. I think you'll agree with that, don't you?
Oh, of course. Like, some of the smartest people I know there in wrestling. If we weren't smart enough, we wouldn't be doing this industry. I mean, I know people that has biochemical engineering degrees. I mean, it's true scholars. You have to be a true scholar to be a wrestler. I mean, you have to know psychology. You have to know a various array of different things, forms of entertainment, in and out of the ring, just to be successful. And going back to what you were saying about Ted Bundy, it's just like, you know, some people have to think, well, why did he the things that he did? Why did he, you know, there has to be a motive, there has to be in so-and-so. But if you think about it, to quote a reference from Michael Caine's Alfred in The Dark Knight, with the Joker character played by Heath Ledger, he said, sometimes people don't need a motive, they just want to watch the world burn. And this is exactly what this Ted Bundy character was. He did things out of spite, out of his enjoyment, out of his sick pleasure of doing the things he did. That's the type of person he was.
Absolutely.
Dr. John, could I add something?
Yeah.
I don't know how many there are, but I know at least one wrestler that is a lawyer, and that's Veda Scott. I don't think she would have to defend herself anytime soon, but I think it's possible that there's more wrestlers that are in the law career.
But the wrestler I mentioned had the biochemical engineering degree was Dr. Tom Pritchard.
Nice.
And a lot, and that's one of the reasons why they call him doctor, because he does have an actual doctorate degree.
Yep. And just for the record, Ashton Kutcher has a bachelor's in chemical engineering with honors. Just so that you know.
Is he a wrestler?
Yeah.
Is he a
no,
wrestler?
Ashton Kutcher.
Okay.
No, he's just
in this conversation.
No, no. I was just saying this because I got to meet him one night. He's one of my fraternity brothers.
Okay.
Believe it or not. We actually had.
I forgot to mention David Otunga as well. He's a high profile WWE talent employee there. He's also a famous lawyer as well.
Yeah, there's quite a few wrestlers that have degrees in different things. Like I said, we have to be smart. We couldn't do this if we were lacking a few brain cells.
Well, here's what I think. I'm gonna put the official Dr. John take on it. A lot of people can be actors and actresses, but they're rehearsing and doing it. You guys are doing it on the spot and in front of thousands of people, and you have to get it right. You got to be smart.
Otherwise, we wouldn't have fans.
Well, you see, that's the difference between Uncle Terry Funk, between Maestro, between these guys that are at the very top, and then the guys that are not, because they can't quite pull it off. I mean, granted,
that's
you were talking
between
about
using crayons and fine orals to paint your picture, more or less.
That's exactly right. And Granny was talking about how much she loved, during the last hour, how much she loved the Rock and Roll Express and the Midnight Express. Well, Granny, those guys had to be really good on the spot in front of thousands of people, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I didn't get a chance to share this story last hour, you know, when I was on WC Retro, but I met Ricky and Robert on several different occasions. And last year, I live in Arkansas, and they were in Alma, Arkansas. They were doing an autograph signing to help raise money to get service dogs for, you know, veterans, you know, which I thought was really cool. And of course, you know, as we all know, Ricky and Robert was part of, you know, got to be in the WWE Hall of Fame. Well, Robert put his WWE Hall of Fame ring on my finger for the picture. I didn't even ask if I could wear it. He just put it on Granny's finger, and I'm like standing there holding my fist up with his WWE Hall of Fame ring on my finger, which I thought was pretty cool. So, but yeah, I mean, I tell you, you know, I love, and I've had so many people tell me, as the wrestling fan that I am, I mean, they thank me for being there at these shows, because not only do I help get the crowd going, and there's nothing more frustrating, and I'm sure you can vouch for this, Stro, there's nothing more frustrating than to have people just come to a wrestling show and they just sit there and they don't do anything. They don't boo,
yeah.
They don't holler, they don't cheer.
Totally.
I mean, they just sit there. And I'm not afraid, you know, and I tell people, I'll say, well, okay, I say, if you don't know who to root for, I said, watch me. I will tell you. Just watch me. And then they pick up on that. Well, you know, when I got this gimmick name, Granny Hulkster, that I got 20-some-odd years ago, I never thought it would stick. My original shirt that I still have is What You're Gonna Do When Granny Hulkster Goes Crazy on You. And I still wear it to independent shows, you know. And mm-hmm. I've got one that says Granny Hulkster, Queen of TCW. And then I have a friend over in Oklahoma that does wrestling shows for kids that have cancer. So I had their logo put on. I got one of their shirts, and I had the name Granny Hulkster put on that shirt, you know, where I wore it at Wrestling for a Cause. So, but I've had wrestlers tell me, you know, Granny, thank you for being here, because without you, you know, I mean, I interact with the wrestlers. I mean, and I especially love the heels. I give them so much grief. You would be amazed at what I can do, what I've done. And I love it. You know, I absolutely love doing what I do because it's so much fun.
Well, that's cool. That's cool. And, you know, the conversation, now, Robin, the conversation in the last 10 minutes has given me an idea, because you and I are looking for a good, popular fundraiser for a wonderful nonprofit that helps dogs. aren't
yes.
we? And I happen to
Definitely.
Know a, and I happen to know a promoter in Charleston, and I happen to know his world heavyweight champion who's on this call, right, Papa Stro?
Yeah,
that's exactly right. And so I'm gonna give Adam a call tomorrow. I think he deserves a phone call. They could, and I'll see if they'll come help us. I mean, I think that would be a grand thing. And you know, on my shows, if we have a good idea, we talk about it. We flat out
Absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely.
And so I'll see. I'll see what our boy thinks. And I think it'd be wonderful because wrestling's a great thing because you know you can really get a lot of folks excited and coming in. To help raise money for great causes. And Papa Stro, you've probably been part of raising over $1 million for great causes in your life, haven't you?
Oh, totally. Yeah, I'm all about it. I'm still doing it.
Oh, I know. You're doing it every day, and you know that number keeps climbing, and that's why we're glad to have you here. Papa Stro brings such an interesting dynamic to a show, and it's wonderful. That's the only reason we have you, Papa Stro, is because you're pretty cool. You know, you're just cool.
I try
so
to
that's
be.
Why we have you.
I try, thank you.
No, you do a good job.
Really
yes, Steve, what were you going to say?
Oh, I sent you a link you might want to read later on the there's a What Culture list of wrestlers inspired based on serial killers. I figured you'd want to read up on that later.
Oh, you had fun with that. There's quite a list.
Yeah.
quite a list.
Steve Austin actually got the Stone Cold name from Iceman, Richard Kuklinski, infamous serial killer, and there are some others listed you might want to read up on.
And you look
okay,
at Mick Foley, you can tell who inspired him. Take a wild guess.
I read Bob Orton went by the Zodiac during his career as well.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Pretty interesting.
Say that again.
Bob Orton went by the Zodiac name, like the Zodiac killer.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
I did not know that. Well, yeah.
What Culture article.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we come across great ideas when we have good people on here, and it was just, I was just thinking, Granny started the idea, and then Papa Stro gave me some more idea, and then Granny. So it was great. And so, Robin, we'll have a talk tomorrow, and I'll call Adam and see
great.
If they'd be interested. No promises, but I know they're good people, aren't they, Papa Stro?
No,
the
yeah.
boys in Charles. They're really good
oh,
people.
Well, it's kind of funny, Dr. John, you know, because, like I said, you know, I mentioned a lot about traditional championship wrestling, you know, last hour when I was on Stro's show and everything. And that's where I've met a lot of big-name wrestlers over the years. And to this day, I mean, they still show the old reruns down in Little Rock, Arkansas, on TV. And to this day, and TCW quit running in 2013, and to this day, I still have people come up to me, whether it's at a wrestling show or on Facebook, say, hey, aren't you Granny from PCW? You know, and because they recognize me from my yellow shirt. And when we were at a show, we went to a show in Nashville, and God love TCW for this because I had not had my first knee replacement surgery yet. And it was at the Tennessee State Fairgrounds because they opened for the Tennessee State Fair. Well, they had
okay.
a little spot roped off for handicap parking. Well, I would have had to walk up this really steep hill and walk from one side of the fairgrounds to the opposite side of the fairgrounds. I'm like, there's no way I could walk that far. Well, Friday morning, and Colonel Tom Parker was helping TCW at the time, and he was
Colonel
helping
Tom,
Matt Revere and them. And
the real Colonel Tom
he,
Parker?
No, his name was Colonel Tom from he lives in Mississippi, but anyways he told Johnny Morton, he says, tell Granny, and Johnny came to me and says, Granny, when you come to the fairgrounds, come up this side road and tell security you're with TCW. Well, I didn't know why. Well, they had arranged it for me to park right by the building, so I didn't have to walk clear across the fairgrounds to the building where the show was going to be at because of my knee. And so I'm coming up to the hill, and I see the security guard. And I've got my tickets in my hand. I got my granny shirt on, and I tell the security guard, I said, "I'm just let you know I'm with TCW." He says, "Well, do you have any credentials?" And I said, "Well, I'm Granny Holster, and I've got my tickets to the show." And he says, "Oh, you're here for the show." I said, "Well, yeah, but I said I have knee problems, but they made arrangements for me to park right by that building. They always took care of me. I mean, they would get me a chair to sit in if, you know, because I couldn't stand for long periods of time. So, yeah, you know, they always took care of me. And I love my wrestling family. I mean, all my wrestling family, so."
Well, that's great. Well, now I'm going to tell you, there's something else that you don't know, Granny. You are in one of my bucket list hot spots. Do you know where Folk, Arkansas is?
I've heard of it.
Never. Okay. Well, there's the Folk Monster there. And Lyle Blackburn, my buddy, wrote the book that they made into a movie. And I know the gal that actually owns, she bought the movie from her father's production company. And one of the places I've always wanted to go is Folk, Arkansas. So, and we might have to do a Scary Cast road trip out to Arkansas, because now we have a friend out there. You got it? You should always go where you have, you always go where you have friends. Right, Robin?
That's right.
Absolutely.
That's exactly right. We'd even bring Papa Stro with us, because we'd have to go through Memphis, and if we go through Memphis, we have to get some barbecue, right, Papa Stro?
Oh yeah, yeah. I used to commute between Memphis and Nashville, man. I know some cool barbecues.
Well, there's one really cool barbecue spot, and it's run by our buddy Jerry Lawler, and I want to go there. So I mean, I could eat barbecue.
Oh, I would love to go there. I've met Jerry Lawler numerous times. I've met him numerous times. I would love to. Matter of fact, I just saw Jerry Lawler not too long ago at CWA in Maumelle, Arkansas, down by North Little Rock at a wrestling show not too long ago. It was an awesome show. So.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah,
I met
Jerry this year as well.
Yeah, we all want to. You know, Papa Stro, all of us want to go hang out together. We're going to have to do a Papa Stro and Murder 123 hangout and just get everybody together somewhere and have fun for an afternoon. Don't you think?
Well, that'd be wonderful.
I mean, we just should. We make Steve come down from Virginia and get Granny over here. We'd have a ball. I mean, we really would. And I guess that's why I do these things. I met so many great people.
Steve could bring a Dark Order posse.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be handing out pamphlets.
Yeah.
Well, now, I don't know if everybody knows the story of even why we are here tonight. And Robin, I know you're wondering sometimes, why are we here? Doing Murder 123. But the reason that I'm doing podcasts is because of a dude on this podcast right now, Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling. He's the one that encouraged me to do a podcast. Then he didn't know that I was going to go crazy over him. Love him to death. I wouldn't miss his for the world. And then I'm so glad he's a regular on Murder 123, and just it's great. So, you know, we just have a good time, and we do talk about murders. And we really do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just say, in getting back to Ted Bundy, he killed a lot of women. He admitted to about 30. They feel like he may have killed as many as 100. He's up there in that stratosphere with none other than our boy Pee Wee Gaskins. And Robin, I'm gonna refer back to you, because do you feel that, because we have noticed a disturbing pattern that all of these serial killers tend to have been mistreated when they were children. Do you get that? Do you get that in particular here?
I mean, if you look at any of these, let's face it, if you are someone that is going around randomly killing people, raping and beating and killing women, your head's not on real straight. I mean, I think it's safe to assume that you're not the norm.
Yes, nail on the head.
So then you start looking to figure out what causes it. And I'm not going to say every single case because that's not true. But in most of these cases, if you track it back, when the kids are little, in those formidable ages where it really can, you know, help sway them one way or the other, you see that there is a long line of abuse from various different people. And when you look at how they murder and you look at the patterns that they have, a lot of times, and again, not all the times, but a lot of times, you can literally pull that back and tie it into what was done to them.
Yeah, and that grandfather is very problematic to me. That would throw his granddaughter down the stairs because she overslept. I mean, I got yelled at by my grandmother for oversleeping one time, and she was right, and then that was it. And then she gave me a hug and a piece of cake. So, I mean, you know, we're all good there. But, I mean, you know.
Well, Robin, I have a question. I want to ask Robin. Because this
sure.
is, I mean, you know, because my first marriage was, I was in a very abusive marriage. I mean, I was married for 2.5 years. I was a single mom for 23.5 years before I got with the man that I'm married to now. But my son was 3 months old, and my husband at the time, he came home one night. He'd been drinking, and he'd been out all night long, and you know, he woke up crying because he was wet. He was hungry. Babies cry when they're wet and they're hungry. And my husband started hitting him. And I jumped. My ex-husband was 6'7" at the time. I mean, he was 6'7". I jumped on top of my waterbed and I grabbed him by the throat and I said, "That's it." I said, "You get out of here." I mean, I said, "I don't care." I said, "I'll kill you if you do not leave now." I mean, I didn't physically do it, obviously, but I kicked him out of the house and I locked the door and I started throwing things in suitcases and boxes, and I called my parents, and then within an hour, my dad was in the town where I was living in at the time, and I never told my dad that he hit my son because my dad probably would have brought a shotgun with him, but getting that long story short, my son never knew his biological father. I mean, he never knew him. He was too young. My son was diagnosed with bipolar disorder when he was 11 years old. He's been in and out of hospitals. He's on medication, you know, and this coronavirus that we're dealing with right now, it's hitting his anxiety level really high. But my ex-husband passed away almost 2 years ago from he had stage 4 bone cancer. He contacts my son on Facebook and sends him a message, says, "I'm your biological father. I need to talk to you," and sends him a friend request. Now, we're talking almost 30 years, over 30 years later, Robin. 30 years later.
Your son deserved better than that.
Well, when the man that I'm married to now, after my dad died, because my son was real close to my dad, when my husband and I got married, my son told me 2 weeks before the wedding, he says, "Mom," he says, "you know, I know Grandpa would want me to do this. I'm going to be the man to step up and give you away at your wedding." And a week before David and I got married, he called me on the phone one day. He says, "Do you think David would care if I start calling him Dad?" And my son is 33 years old. He turned 33 years old in January this year. And I had to contact my ex-brother-in-law to find out why my ex-husband wanted to talk to my son. And he said, well, he was trying to make his life right with God and life right with Anthony after 30-plus years later. I mean, and my son says, why would I want to talk to a man I don't even know? You know, I mean, he never knew him.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I have an ex-husband that has done similar things, so I sympathize. And your son deserves better than a note after 30 years saying, "Hi, I'm here."
Well, it was a message on Facebook, you know, it's like, send him a friend request. I need to talk to you because he wanted to try to make his life right with a child that he never knew. I mean, the night that my son was born, he went and told all of his friends at the bar that there was no way that could be his baby because that baby had blonde hair. That was his
excuse. Just ridiculous.
You know, so go figure.
Yeah.
Wow, that's
astounding.
That's a class A mess. That's a class A mess, and it's a very interesting story to hear. And I think Robin's a good person to ask because she does have some talents in the area of perception about people and events and things like that. And we love her to death. Thank you, Robin, for being with us, and you'll always be with us because you have some of that very interesting advice, like Papa Stroh does. That's right. Even Papa Stroh yelled at me for jumping in the coffin with the Italian Stallion and having them slam the door on me. Even Papa Stroh. It's the first time you ever, you said, John. And I felt like that was the dad voice. John, do you remember that?
Yeah,
I can tell you, that was in Camden, and you looked at me and you said, "John," I got caught. So there are actually two people in this world that can give me the voice, and I'll know I've done something wrong. One is Robin McCray, and the other one's Papa Stroh. So you gotta know who your people are, and Granny, I got both my people here on the show tonight. So now you know who I have to answer to, and I have
well,
to be careful.
You know, it's kind of funny. Maybe Granny's going to have to get some sort of voice to come up with and say, John.
Oh, you're on
voice. The mom voice always works.
Listen, honey, I'd love to have another mom voice. I think you're great. So don't even worry about it. That's why. You know what is funny? It's like so Granny's talking on Rob's show, Maestro show, for like 10 seconds. I said, I want to get to know this lady. She's cool. So you see, I got my wish, Granny, and now you met two of my main people in the world. So
well, you know, I listen to Stroh every week on Brady Hicks's show. You know, and I made a promise to Stroh. I said last week, I said, I'm going to make a promise to you that I'm going to call into your show sometime, Stroh. And normally I am busy on Thursday nights because I'm a member of the Moose Lodge. And, of course, with the virus thing going on, our Moose Lodge is currently closed right now at the moment. So I haven't been able to go to my meetings. But, you know, so that gave me an opportunity to call in to Stroh's show tonight because I made a promise to him. I said, I'm going to call into your show one night. And like I said, I love doing what I do at wrestling shows. I mean, I've had wrestlers, I've been handcuffed to a manager before at a wrestling show, guys, at Wrestling for a Cause. I've been handcuffed to a manager before. They came up and told me, they said, Granny, we're going to handcuff you to Pierce tonight. I'm like, okay. And they literally did. They handcuffed me to this manager.
And the manager called in tonight, actually. Remember the manager that called in? Remember the manager that called
in?
Yeah.
The Stone.
Yeah.
Well, they actually handcuffed me to this manager at this wrestling show that night.
Mm-hmm. During my coffin match, I got handcuffed to the table where I announced, and then Bloodseeker ripped those little handcuffs apart and threw me in the ring, and that's where I got thrown in the coffin. So yes, Maestro, the whole nine yards. It was great. So now everybody knows, and I can tell you this: it's been absolutely the most fun this special edition, because we had communication problems on Monday night, and now we have Granny, we have Robin, we have Steve, we have Maestro, and me over here in Myrtle Beach, and I'm gonna tell you what, everybody's just going stir crazy. I'm so glad. You know what? The best thing you can do is get on a podcast and have Papa Stroh the first hour and a half, and then you guys the second hour and a half. And I tell you what, with all y'all, it's just lightened up this whole dead coronavirus time here. I'm sorry, that may be inappropriate.
So, what
but
time do you do your shows on Monday, Dr. John?
Well, we try to do them at 10, but they go to about 11:30, and so I'll shoot you a text.
And that's Eastern time,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but I can shoot you We got a whole raft of them, so don't worry about it. And Papa Stroh's with us on Monday night.
Well, see, like I said, the podcast that I help with, we have a lot of different guests other than wrestlers on our podcast on Attitude Era Live on Monday nights. We do ours from 9 o'clock Central Time to 11 Central Time. Unless I just tell Icon and Big Swing say, hey guys, Granny's going to take needs a sabbatical for a few weeks.
Granny, we run 5 nights a week, Sunday through Thursday. So I'll get you the schedule, mm-hmm. okay? And if you're going to be on, Papa Stroh is kind enough to be on the Monday night show. But Papa Stroh, if Granny says she can be on some night, I'll let you know, mm-hmm. and you can come hang out with us, okay?
Wonderful.
Absolutely, Granny. And Robin, if Granny's going to be on the show, will you hang out with us too?
Of course. Us women have to stick together.
Yeah, y'all got to hang.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah. Yes, women's got to stick together,
it.
You know? So,
mm-hmm.
I mean.
Exactly. So then. That's right. So at least I'll have Papa Stroh to protect me if the girls decide I've done something wrong. The Papa Stroh.
Oh, man.
Oh my God.
I'm going to be taking the daggers for Dr. John. I see.
That's exactly
oh,
right.
Oh, yeah. See how that is there, Stroh?
Yeah, I'll be like in those pin cushions with the needles. Yeah, I'll be one of them.
Okay, because I got to find that. Now here's the deal, and I'll go ahead and tell y'all what I do. Cause y'all are all my friends. I mean, you know, I mean, I talk to y'all. I don't mind telling you what I'm doing. I have just put together on my birthday, November the 7th, an incredible event at the most haunted battlefield in America. That is Perryville, north of Lexington. They have consented today that I can bring 35 people, and we are going to have the damnedest ghost hunt you ever saw. And now, Miss Robin, the reason that I want to talk to you about this, if we're at a large state park, who do you think
mm-hmm.
might be hanging out there? Who?
Well, everything will be hanging out there.
Including.
They all hang together.
But including our best friend, who is?
Well, the foot will be there. The dog
yeah,
will be there.
Bigfoot's going to be there. That's right. So well,
and
I told them, I said, yeah, we're going to do ghosts. But, you know, there's Bigfoot. I said, there's Bigfoot up there. And they said, what? You should have heard him. Yeah, I wish I had taped that conversation. That would have been nasty. Yeah, so, you know, and so if I can pull that off, because that would be a real feather in my cap to get something like that going. You see, I already mentioned Polk, Arkansas. If we, Granny, I'll find out where that is and I'll let you know. And Lyle Blackburn, everybody listen now, Lyle Blackburn, one of the most famous paranormal authors in the universe, he told me that if I ever get the wherewithal to put together a conference in Polk, Arkansas, that he will come there. So I'm going to find out where that is, and Granny, I'll find out where you are, and Papa Stroh, and I'll tell everybody, if we could do a conference in Polk, Arkansas, where the beach, the Boggy Creek, resides, which is a Bigfoot, let's face it, it's a Bigfoot, that would be really cool. That could be our meet together, and then when we're done, we can go on up to Memphis and eat some barbecue. So I'll see what
oh,
I can
that would
do.
That cool.
I can tell you...
Dr. John, where I live in Springdale, Arkansas, which is about 3 hours from Little Rock.
That's fine. Listen, there's not as we say in the hills, ain't nothing that far from anything in Arkansas, right?
Well, yeah, and I'm about 8.5, and I think when I went to Nashville, it was about 9 hour drive when I went to Nashville. So,
oh, if it's 9 hours
from
Nashville. So it's probably
about 8.5, not quite nine hours, almost, but not quite. But
so you're probably about five right. hours from Memphis. Yep. So I'll
probably I'm about
we'll
5 hours
out.
From Memphis because one of my good wrestling buddies lives in Dyersburg, Tennessee, over there. So Greg Anthony.
No, you, didn't, You didn't say that right. You said it correctly. That's not how they say it. It's Dyersburg.
I'm originally from Kansas. I'm a Kansas girl. I'm not originally from Arkansas.
But I'm just saying you had too many. You did it correctly. It's like PFF AFFWN, which should be Fafftown, but if you're in Winston Salem, it's Pofftown, and don't you ever forget it, and that'll get you out of a ticket too. But anyway, so that's what we got.
Okay.
But look, folks, thank you so much. I'm going to release everybody back out to the world. It's been the most fun. Robin, thank you for being here.
Me too.
Yeah, it was great
thank you guys
to meet
so much.
Well, now I'm going to say thank you to everybody individually. I'm going to be the teacher now. So everybody keep in their seats until I give you permission to leave. Robin, thank you very much. We always appreciate you being
pleasure,
here.
Oh, my pleasure, always.
And for my other co-host, Papa Stro, the maestro of wrestling, it's always great to have you here. I mean, it just really is. It's old days are always old days when you're back here with us. And our guests, first of all, our recurring guest that we always like to have, Steve, who is the professor of wrestling. He's great, and met him through Papa Stro, and just he's a great guy, and he always knows so much. Thank you, Steve, for being here. Are you there?
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. We're always glad to have you. And our new friend, Granny, we're so glad to have you. And thanks, and it was fun.
It was certainly a pleasure and an honor. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
And I'll be talking because we're now friends on Facebook, and I'll start.
Yes, we are.
I'm sorry. I'm just here at the house, and when I'm not working, I have to Facebook. That's why I got 1,100 friends. Oh, Papa Stro, congratulations. I saw that on one of yours, because you got several Facebooks. I saw on one of them you hit 5,000. Congratulations.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I just got some great people, man. I'm really blessed.
I think you have some pretty good people that really are big fans of yours, like yours truly. So we're so glad to have everybody here. Thanks. I will do the call around as I normally do to the hosts and say thank you. I couldn't do it whenever it was the last time I had a show. I couldn't do it because everything was just crazy on the internet. But I think everything's better now. They were out here doing some work on the fiber. So that's all good. So thanks a lot. And I will be talking to everybody. And we'll see you guys. We're back Monday night. And the dossier will come out Sunday. And it will be anybody but Albert Fish. I'll tell you that. That ought to let you know to go listen to it. So thanks for being here. It's always a lot of fun with this crowd. And thank you. And we miss Devin, who's got a hall pass. And we miss Tony Pelosi. He's got a hall pass, too. Tony said it was crazy up there because he's in enforcement up in Harlan, Kentucky. And he said it was just nuts. So anyway, we miss Tony. He'll be back with us Monday night. It'll be great, along with Robin and Papa Stro. So anyway, thanks a lot. We'll see you sooner than later, as we say. Thanks to our guests, Steve and Granny. And y'all be good. And if you can't be good, tell us about it.
Good night, everybody.
Happy
okay,
night.
Bye-bye.
Night.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We are one.